Genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turning now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're live every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. You can also hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is smart radio with sharp questions aimed at intelligent guests. It's talk radio done right for the 21st century. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is deeper understanding. Each of my guests will give us a deeper understanding of his or her subject, whether it's corruption in college football, Steve McQueen, or world travel. My first guest is an investigative journalist for the Seattle Times who, with his writing partner, exposed a community's blind embrace of college football and how it corrupted and compromised judges, prosecutors, police agencies, and an entire university and the media. We'll discuss his book, Scoreboard, Baby. My second guest is a celebrity biographer who's known for his biographies of Ronald Reagan, among others. We'll turn his attention to one of America's legendary movie stars and make much of his turbulent life on and off the screen as we examine his biographies of Steve McQueen. My third guest is a travel writer and a consultant who harkens back to the golden age of travel. She decides and describes her world adventure of traveling between several continents without flying on an airplane. And if you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008. Ken Armstrong is an investigative reporter and an Edgar Award-winning author. He has been nominated for the Nieman Fellow at Harvard University and the McGraw Professor of Writing at Princeton. In 2009, he won the John Chancellor Award from Columbia University for Lifetime Achievement. He now works at the Seattle Times. Prior to that, he worked at the Chicago Tribune. Ken is a four-time finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. After earning his bachelor's degree from Purdue, Ken had false starts in law school at the University of Chicago and in the Peace Corps, and before he got on to his real work as a reporter. Ken also co-wrote Scoreboard Baby, a story of college football, crime, and complicity. Ken is married. He lives in Seattle with his wife and his two children. Joining us from the Seattle area. Hi, Ken. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you, Bill?
Well, I'm doing terrific. Thanks so much for being my guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. Your book is really kind of fascinating because it's a look behind the scenes at the 2000 Washington Huskies football team that was coached by Rick Neuchel. And what you discovered actually was just sobering to me, that four out of five players on that team failed to meet the University of Washington's admission standards. Only one out of three players on that team actually graduated. And most disturbing of all, 24 players were arrested or charged with some crime during their years at the university. I mean, that's just, it's awful. And there's a lot of blame to go around because a lot of people turned a blind eye to this. Clearly, there's some fault with the players, the coaches, even law enforcement, some of the officials of the town, members of the legal profession. Seattle as a community didn't rise up against that. The local media tried to hush it up, and of course, the University of Washington itself. Tell us, what does the 2000 Washington Huskies story really tell us about college sports in general, Ken?
You know, to me, if it tells us one thing, it's all about collective complicity. You know, just as you were describing the book, you know, it's easy sometimes to fault the players and players alone for going off the rails, you know, when they get in trouble away from the field. But what we found was that they had a lot of help when that happened, and that the community institutions consistently looked away and failed to hold these players to account. And a number of these players were under investigation for very serious crimes. You know, one was accused of rape. Another had robbed and shot a drug dealer. Another had an extensive history of domestic violence. So in each of these instances, you're looking at serious crimes of violence, and yet for a variety of reasons, these players weren't held to account, and they were allowed to continue taking the field during that season.
It was almost a win-at-all-costs philosophy that they were embracing at the University of Washington.
It is.
And to be fair, they did make it to the Rose Bowl that particular year, played Purdue. What was the outcome of that game? Were they the victors in that game?
They did. Washington won, and they wound up being ranked in the top five nationally that year. It was really the last great Washington team. And that Rose Bowl was the culmination of a phenomenal season for them on the field. You know, not only did they only lose one time during the season, but more often than not, they won in the last minute of the game or the last 2 minutes of the game. You know, it was an incredibly exciting season from a fan's perspective, which makes what was happening off the field, to my mind, all the more telling, you know, in terms of while everybody was celebrating in the stands, there were people away from the field who were feeling hurt and betrayed. And it's really those stories that we tried to concentrate on most of all in the book.
And would you say that those stories off the field marred the performance and the overall thrill that the community should have gotten because of the team's antics on the field?
I think you need to balance the two out. You know, I think it's a mistake to view sports purely as entertainment. I don't think that that's the case anymore, not even at the college level. You know, it's a big money enterprise. The stakes go beyond, you know, the stadium on a Saturday afternoon. And, you know, that's something that we heard after we had written the book and after we had written a newspaper series on the same subject, was that there were a number of fans who looked back on their own emotional stake in that season and view it with regret. You know, for example, one of the stars on that team was a tight end named Jeremy Stevens. He was critical to the team's offense. Well, before the season started, he was accused of rape, and he wound up being arrested by a SWAT team. So he was arrested in a highly public fashion that made the newspapers. Everybody knew he was under investigation, and the question was whether or not he would be charged. And this interesting dynamic took hold, where the sports writers, the newspapers, started writing about if he's charged and if he's suspended, will the team still be able to make the Rose Bowl? You know, they took an alleged crime in which one person's life had been turned upside down, another person was facing the prospect of prison, and they converted it into a question that had to do with the repercussions for a game. And the community participated in that. There were fans who wrote us afterwards saying they remember that when the decision was made and announced that he would not be charged, they remember celebrating because they realized the Huskies' chances of making it to the Rose Bowl that year had just improved dramatically. They look back now and realize that, you know, their priorities were skewed, you know, that really that wasn't what was the most important point at issue in the decision of whether or not he should be charged.
My guest is Ken Anderson. And Ken, that brings me to the larger overall question. And just like you said, have our values become twisted or skewed when it comes to sports figures at any level of competition? I'm not just talking about college or professional. I think this goes down to high school and junior high school level. Are we just out of kilter when it comes to our perspective on sports?
Yeah, I think sometimes with sports, our emotions get so wrapped up in a team that you know, we lose true north on our moral compass. And you're right. That keeps moving down and down further into the schools. You know, and one of the most troubling scenes I see, and we've seen this play out time and again, is when you have some 17-year-old in high school who has been heavily recruited by a variety of schools, and he finally makes the announcement of where he's going to go. More and more, you see television cameras at these announcements. You know, sometimes it's just the local media, but more and more, you find national media now, you know, if it's a really prized recruit. And to me, what kind of message does that send when we're devoting that kind of attention to a decision made by a 17-year-old on where he's going to go to school? What is the message that it sent to that young man? What's the message that's sent to the community? You see more and more stories now about 15-year-olds who are already on the radar of big schools, you know, in terms of they're already identifying people at the age of 15, 14, you know, who they're going to want to recruit in years to come. It really does pervert our sense of what is most important. And it's a shame, I say, when you keep seeing it go to younger and younger ages.
My guest is Ken Armstrong. We're talking about his book, Scoreboard Baby, a story of college football crime and complicity. I guess let's look at this from the player's standpoint, if we can, for just 1 minute, Ken, because these kids have all the attention lavished on them. They get into a college like the University of Washington where they wouldn't otherwise have made it because of their board scores and everything else. Only one-third of them graduate from the school. Does college sports create a sense of entitlement among the scholarship players, do you think?
I don't know if it's a sense of entitlement. In some ways, I am sympathetic to the plight of student athletes because I think the demands that are made of them are unrealistic. You know, a lot of them come to the university with an academic grounding that's not comparable to their classmates. You know, a lot of them would not have been accepted were it not for sports. That's not true of all cases, certainly, but it's often true. And then when they get to the university, they're expected to be not only a full-time student, but they also have to devote an incredible number of hours to sports. You know, the NCAA supposedly caps it, but I'm not convinced, you know, that these programs aren't finding ways to get extra hours into the week out of all of these student athletes. So I think that it's tough for them in a lot of ways. And a lot of them don't take classes seriously. A lot of them don't take their degrees seriously. And we write about that at length in the book. The University of Washington has managed to find ways to keep students academically eligible. A lot of them will take classes like sexuality in Scandinavia, you know, a class which I guess is not a surprise, books up fast every year.
Sure.
Swahili is a favorite of football players at the University of Washington. When they're in danger of flunking out, they wind up taking Swahili. We found student athletes who were taking 30 credits in it, 25 credits in it. You know, and when their GPA was starting to get down to 2.0 and they were in danger of losing their eligibility, they would take Swahili and they would get a good grade and would bounce back up above that line. The professor accommodated the student athletes. You know, when they had away games, he would fax exams to the coaches, and the coaches could fax the exam answers back. This was something where players knew year after year that when you needed to bump your GPA up, that was the class to take. They also allowed them to take majors that, you know, kind of are head-scratchers, you know, in some instances, like media presentation. In some cases, students can make up their own majors and come up with their own program of study. And, you know, if you're cynical, you know, it's easy to view that as a way to get a degree without really getting much of an education.
Well, clearly it is that, Ken. But go with me a step farther on this, if you will, because these guys all have dollar signs in their eyes when they're going to college. They've been recruited. They've been built up. And if they have some success on the field, then they know that the pro scouts are going to be looking at them. And the starting salary for just a bench warmer in the NFL today is exorbitant by average standards. So, of course, students don't take their education seriously because they don't need the education once they graduate if they get into the pro system. And even if they ride the bench, they're better off than 99% of Americans today. So, again, I come back to this entitlement. Are we building up this sense of entitlement? Is it the responsibility of the coaches and the adults in this situation to pull them back and say, hey, you need to look at this realistically. What if you get injured? You may not play all of your life. What are you going to do after football?
It is. You know, and I think that, you know, coaches and athletic directors would be wise right from the get-go, you know, when they get their recruiting class in, to just tell them the real statistics about how many of them are going to go on and play professional ball. Because, you know, it's a very low percentage. Very few of those student athletes are going to be able to cash in at the professional level, which makes their education all the more important. And it's a real shame, you know, when they do have those dreams of riches that you're speaking of, when, you know, they're phantoms. They're not going to happen. So if you leave that university without a degree or with a degree that's not going to help you in the marketplace, you've really lost an opportunity. And we see that happen time and time again. And it's a real shame.
My guest is Ken Armstrong. We're talking about his book, Scoreboard Baby. I'm going to turn the tables on you, Ken, and I'm going to ask the question this way. Should college athletes be paid? I mean, they're bringing in millions of dollars to the university through television rights and endorsements and all of that kind of stuff for the school. Should the college athlete be paid for that and just recognize what their contribution is to the university? And by paying them, you also then have the right to fire them because they're an employee. Your thoughts on that?
I think if it's viewed realistically, that could help. It's not a cure-all. It's not a panacea. But a lot of these student-athletes don't have outside income. You know, and even though you're paying their scholarship and you're paying for their room and board, they don't have money to go to the movies. They don't have money to go home over the holidays. And when I was in college, I had an outside job. I think a lot of folks do. And that's how you make that additional money that improves your quality of life, you know, outside of the classroom walls. I think it's hard for athletes to do that as well. And when you see these scandals like you had at Ohio State, right, where players were selling autographs and jerseys and other merchandise to a tattoo parlor, you know, in exchange for money or tattoos, I think that that's probably at the heart of it. You know, they're getting that additional money that they're otherwise not able to make. I don't think it's a cure-all, but I think it would help. I think it might also reduce some of the cynicism that surrounds college football now. There was a brilliant piece written in The Atlantic recently by Taylor Branch, which talked about how these colleges exploit these students for financial gain and refuse to let them get anything in return beyond the scholarship. And I think a lot of people view the NCAA unfavorably, and I think that's part of it, is that we just see these colleges and the ruling governing institution as exploiting these players and taking advantage of them. I think paying them something might help alleviate that.
All right. My guest is Ken Armstrong. Ken, it's not all bad, and I don't want to paint the picture all negative. There were some uplifting stories in the book, too. Tell the story about the academically very unexceptional athlete who was encouraged by one of his coaches to go to South Africa. His experiences there turned his life around. He ends up winning the Mary Gates Scholarship, which was established by Microsoft founder Bill Gates for his leadership. Tell that story, because I think that's very uplifting.
Sure. There was a player on the 2000 Huskies, a linebacker named Anthony Kelly, and he was unusual in the sense that when he came to the university, he was a Prop 48 student. His grades and his board scores were so low that he couldn't be brought into the university even as a special admit. I think his high school GPA was around 2.0, and his SAT scores were incredibly low. So you would not anticipate that he would find academic success at the university. At the same time, he was an incredibly gifted athlete. All of this would seem to not be the best formula for somebody to catch fire academically, but that's exactly what happened with Anthony Kelly. With the help of a coach and with the help of a tutor and with the help of faculty members, he took a real interest in sociology and international affairs. He wound up studying abroad in South Africa. He wound up becoming interested in different elements of philanthropy. He was bringing people over from South Africa to here. He wound up adopting children who needed a home. He was not only became an extraordinary student, he became an extraordinary man in a lot of ways. And what is particularly telling about his story was that he will say that all of those good things academically happened not because of the athletic department, but in spite of the athletic department. You know, he relates getting pushback when he wanted to spend more time studying and more time with homework than with looking at the playbook and with practice. The pushback came not only from coaches, but some of the coaches, but also from his fellow players who couldn't understand why he was giving up the NFL dream so that he could spend time studying. So it was a fascinating story of success that still was consistent with this theme of misplaced priorities in terms of the institution as a whole. He wound up graduating. He wound up going on and getting a master's degree as well. So he's a success story, but a pretty unusual one.
Yeah, we're going to have to leave it there. My guest is Ken Anderson. Ken, if people like what they hear, they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
They can find the book on Amazon. It's Scoreboard Baby. They can also find, there's a website for the book, which is www.scoreboardbaby.net. And I also have an author website, and that is at kenarmstrong.us.
Yeah, that is great. Ken, thank you so much for being my guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
All right. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you. And I'll